You're with us for a conversation about breastfeeding and what it's been like in the pandemic era. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. The National Institutes of Health, the NIH, launched an observational study last month to study the immune responses of COVID vaccines given to pregnant or postpartum people. And the investigators plan to enroll up to 1,000 participants and infants in the study and follow them for the first year after delivery. What questions do you have about breastfeeding research? What messages are communicated about nursing in your community or at your workplace? 800-642-1234. Beth Olson is a breastfeeding researcher, associate professor in the Department of Nutritional Sciences at UW-Madison. Let's bring in Creel now in Madison. Hi, Creel. What is your experience?
Hi. Oh, my goodness. I'm so happy to be on and just so excited that you're having this conversation.
Oh, I have good.
A 7-month-old. She was born Christmas Day. And so we were, you know, right in the middle of wintertime pandemic experience. And my comment just relates to we were fortunate enough to be able to have a midwife. We had planned for a home birth and the home birth didn't work out. So we did birth in a hospital. But because we had planned for to work with a midwife at home, she and her student midwife came to see us in home. So you were talking a little bit about what types of support, lactation support, did you have access to or not? And just having that, the services of someone to come into my home as a brand new mother. She came, you know, day one, day three, day 10, day 14. And then I think again, day maybe 4 months or I'm sorry, 1 month. That in-home care was just really critical, I think, to me and my husband being able to feel supported because neither, you know, we were trying to figure out how to deal with our families coming to visit and getting that support during COVID. And we did, you know, we wore masks with our midwife and the student midwife, and we had these sort of like filter fans running, and we tried to limit time a little bit, but that support was just amazing. And I can't imagine having to have gone into the hospital, you know, with all of their procedures and everything. And the one other thing I'll just say is that those services were not covered by our insurance. So we paid for that out of pocket. And that's a really, you know, severe equity issue right there that that should be addressed. And I would really encourage people to, you know, reach out to their insurance companies and ask for that to be a service that's covered.
Oh, Creel, thank you so much for sharing your story. Beth, what do you hear there about that in-home support?
Yes, there is, unfortunately, here in the United States, with the way that our insurance system runs, we often don't support that kind of help, particularly for people who have private insurance, that is, you know, insurance through their work. There are programs through public health for people who are of limited income, where they do have home visiting nurses who often can address something like this. There are, through the Women, Infant, and Children program, the Supplemental Nutrition Program, many of those have peer counselors who will either see women in an office, but sometimes in their homes. And often those people are, because they're peer counselors, they understand what women are going through. They're from their community. They've been in the same circumstances. They've breastfed a baby. So they really understand what the barriers are that women are up against. But I totally agree. And in other countries, for instance, in some in Europe, every woman who goes home with a new baby gets visited at home by a healthcare worker. And that just gets the mom and the baby and the family off to just the best start. There's nothing like having, you know, somebody in your home seeing what you're doing, what you're up against, what you have as resources to help you to get going in taking care of your baby just in general, as well as for breastfeeding. I just think it's a wonderful service that would be wonderful if we could provide to more women.
Creel, thanks for the call. Chris now in Racine. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have found that though there are places and rooms and time that is accommodated, there has been no refrigeration provided. And so what is happening is women are pumping their breasts and then dumping it just to keep the production going normally. But I haven't seen accommodation with refrigeration.
Yeah, refrigeration and running water, Beth.
Yeah, very important. In the recommendations for lactation support, certainly refrigeration is one. And, you know, we would prefer separate refrigeration, for instance, a refrigeration right within a lactation room. There are women also, you know, if you will, because they're embarrassed, you know, hiding their milk in bottles and bags and then taking them and putting them in the refrigerator with, you know, that people are using for their lunches. There's nothing unsanitary about that. Breast milk is, you know, very clean. It's it has protective agents to keep it good. But still, they're using that because there is no refrigeration provided. And, you know, it would just break my heart, you know, when I would hear or see women dumping milk. I know I traveled for work when my children were little, and I went to just extraordinary measures, you know, calling the front desk and begging for them to bring me up a mini fridge before those were common, you know, so that I could refrigerate milk. And then fortunately for me, it was pre-9/11 where liquids were an issue, and then carrying it with ice packs home, mm-hmm. you know, so that I didn't have to dump any, because that's, you know, it's a tremendous resource, a tremendous effort to get it. So helpful for the baby. So to have to pour it out is just really a shame.
Chris, what have you experienced, may I ask? You know, how are you now?
Well, I'm helping others now because I'm past the, what I did is I didn't have refrigeration when and so I did dump. And then eventually I did quit pumping during the day, and my breast production did accommodate. I would breastfeed before I went to work, and I would breastfeed the second I got home. Mm. And then I would breastfeed through the night without any issue. But until that was after I had that set up after a year, I was fine. But during that first 3 months, you absolutely have to pump during the first 6 months to you have to pump
to get
in order
that
to keep production in it. Keep it coming. And I dumped the milk. But what's happening is employees are squeamish about having anyone's body fluids in their food refrigerator. It makes them squeamish, a lot of them. And I think that's education and acceptance. But a refrigerator in the breast pump room would just be so ideal. And I'm finding that I work with patients, and I'm finding that there isn't accommodation for their breast milk either, and it is being dumped.
Mm. Chris, thank you for sharing your experience as we talk about breastfeeding with Beth Olson, an associate professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison. Let's bring in Renee now in Stevens. Hi, Renee.
Hi. Thank you for doing this show. It's been so informative, and I think it's just so important get this information
sure.
out there.
Yeah.
A few years ago, I was training to become a postpartum doula. I think most people are very used to and are now used to the idea of a birth doula who helps you, you know, prior to the birth of your child and during the birthing process. A postpartum doula is there for you once you come home. We would work with you through that 3 month period of time mm-hmm. after the birth of your child, that postpartum time. I did not continue. I was trained and got the training, but I did not continue simply because where I live, there wasn't a great demand for it. I think in the Madison and Milwaukee area, I think it was, you might find more demand for a postpartum doula. But I did work with a few women, and one woman in particular that I was able to help with the lactation process and issues. You're trained as a postpartum doula to be very knowledgeable and learn a lot about the breastfeeding process, of course, other things as well, but you go into the family's home, you're there to help them
It's a very personal experience and
very much
individual. Yeah.
Yes. And you need to develop this trust relationship as well. And it is very individual. You do what the family feels they need. And I just think if we had more access, women, families had more access, how great that would be to have someone there with expertise and knowledge who's right there with you on a daily basis for that 3 months.
Beth, let's hear what Beth has to say about that trust and about those relationships.
Yes, that's really important. And I think, you know, the need for this is just, you know, how we've evolved or changed in society. You know, someone like my grandmother, you know, and I'm older now, so she would, you know, she was, this was quite some time ago, you know, she had her babies at home and her family lived, you know, on the nearby farms. And so her sisters or her mother or cousins would come over, and we called, it's been called in by a nurse midwife, mothering the mother, and they would pass on the traditions of motherhood. Here's how you hold the baby. Here's how you feed the baby. You know, and they helped her with her cooking and her cleaning. But as times went on, my mother, for instance, recalls when she had her children, nobody helped her. She was away from her family. She was in the hospital now. There weren't lactation consultants available, and nobody helped. So I think now we're moving back to realizing we do need that kind of support, but we don't all live in a community with all of our relatives who can come over and help us. And of course, during COVID, often family couldn't come. And so the support of someone like a postpartum doula, you know, is just a wonderful idea. Again, there probably aren't enough of them. Again, you know, you may need to pay for those services, and some women can't afford them, don't know about them. But I think they are developing then that trust, that support, that feeling of family, of a peer, that we used to perhaps in days gone by get from our immediate family who were around us.
That history. Yeah. Breastfeeding researcher Beth Olson at UW-Madison with us on how the pandemic has changed infant nutrition. While breastfeeding, did your diet change? Did you make a deliberate effort to eat certain foods, avoid others? Do you worry about expressing milk at work and have time and space to do it? Still time to talk about this. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Beth Olson on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with UW-Madison nutrition scientist Beth Olson on breastfeeding and what has changed in the pandemic. The CDC says in boldface type, if you are pregnant, you can receive a COVID-19 vaccine. It goes on to say getting the vaccine during pregnancy can protect you from severe illness from COVID. Beth Olson, she's with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's go to Susie now in Milwaukee. Hi, Susie.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. So my question is, as an employer who very much is in support of women and women in the workplace, I had a staff recently who had a baby and was breastfeeding and pumping in work and trying to support that. And my question is, where is the balance in supporting her and the time that it took her to do this with, like, an hour at a time? It's a direct service kind of business where she's working with clients in residential treatment who are always present. And she's got only a couple other coworkers. So when she's off pumping, and sometimes she would do it privately, sometimes she wouldn't. There was ability to do that privately. It created some conflict because of the amount of time when she's doing this, then everybody else is covering for her, or else if we were in meetings, then she would pump during a meeting and it made people uncomfortable, or if she had to see clients, she would pump while seeing clients and it made people uncomfortable, and everybody was also nervous about saying something to her. So my question is, where's the balance around that?
Beth.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of thing we'd like to address, you know, moving forward in our research. Is how do we address that up front before, you know, someone's in our workplace needing this accommodation and we haven't figured it out. And there are situations which are going to be much more tricky where companies are small, there aren't as many people to cover, where there's a lot of interaction. You know, when you think about it, people who travel for work a lot, salespeople. So they don't have a lactation room because they're traveling around the country. Or, you know, some other area. So what do we do for them? And so that's something that needs to be addressed in the beginning with workflow. Is there a way for us to change what we're doing for the short term? And I think what people need to realize now, an hour to pump is fairly long. That's usually not what it takes if someone has accommodation close to where they are. But also we need to remember that that frequency and that amount of pumping is short term. Most women, you know, are coming back to work maybe 6 weeks or 3 months here in the U.S. where we don't have any federal paid leave like they do in other countries. We come back sooner. So after that, though, the intensity of pumping is probably for about 3 months. And then the baby starts to eat solid food. They don't need as much breast milk, and a woman doesn't need to pump as much. So as one of the callers was saying, it gets to a point where you can sometimes even pump or breastfeed your baby before and after work, and you don't need to pump during the day. So it is a short term, you know, not ongoing for a couple of years like some people sometimes think. But again, those conversations have to happen very early on and involve all the people involved, like coworkers. Like, what are you comfortable with? What could we do to make this easier for you as well as the mom who's pumping so that everybody's role is understood and accommodated?
Yeah, it's where the paving those policies early on and having those policies established also would help the in you know, making sure that you know what's happening with breastfeeding and where you can do it and just all the things around it. Casey in Milwaukee is with us. Casey, hi.
Hi there.
Hi, what would you like to add?
So I just wanted to add, you're touching on a lot of different issues and things dealing with breastfeeding. And I just had my third child a month ago, and I am nursing.
Oh.
I've nursed and pumped and breastfed all of my kids exclusively. And with my first, it was really, really, really challenging. Lactation consulting was not covered by insurance, and I needed help really badly. My daughter was never able to nurse, and I wound up just pumping for her for over a year. It was really hard, and I think I had postpartum depression as a result of that. And I think it's just so, so important that people push their insurance companies and push their employers to support breastfeeding and to support policies that support breastfeeding, because if you don't, nothing is going to change. So I now work for a company where the insurance covered lactation consulting, and I was able to get help with my second child, and it went much smoother. And now this time around, it's the easiest it's ever been. And so it's just, and I've written to my company because their maternity leave policy was, in my opinion, way too short. And I wrote to HR and said, you know, you need to reconsider this maternity leave policy. 5 weeks is not enough. It's not enough time. And nothing has changed yet, but, you know, you gotta speak up, and you have to stand up for what you want. And hopefully, you know, breastfeeding will become more normalized, and it'll become just, you know, something super normal, and companies will all have policies that support it and let women pump whenever they need to and whatever. But it's just so important to, like, be your own advocate and just say something.
Yeah, Casey, thank you for saying something and joining us. Beth, you know, Casey saying speak up.
Exactly. That's what we need. First of all, I want to commend her on her dedication, because that is not easy to breastfeed, period, in our society, cannot, and work, and then to do all that pumping. But she did a wonderful thing for her baby, and that's just, I really commend her. But I think in the, one of the themes that is being brought out in the National Breastfeeding Month and World Breastfeeding Week is community. In other words, there's a tendency for us to just think, well, this is a personal decision. This woman can decide what she wants to do. But sometimes she can't. Sometimes the decision isn't all up to her because she doesn't have what she needs. And that is something where our whole community can come together and say, we're going to make public spaces friendly for breastfeeding. we are, as companies, going to support families, which includes breastfeeding. And we're all going to do this because it's good for society as a whole. Having healthier babies means having healthier children, means having healthier adults. Healthier moms are healthier adults. That takes a burden off our healthcare system. That makes people more productive. They're better contributors to society. So this isn't just about, well, she can decide what she wants to do. It's if a woman wants to breastfeed and we help her do that, we're all going to win. Companies are going to win in their productivity, their reduced healthcare costs. We're going to win when people in general are healthier, can work, can reach their full potential right from birth.
When we only have a few moments left here, but when you look at the CDC data, Wisconsin being below the national average in breastfeeding initially at birth, what can Wisconsin do to boost those numbers?
I think the public health campaigns, the social media campaigns to raise awareness is one. I think the government providing some incentives, some recognition, some help in terms of companies getting lactation programs started, encouragement, public recognition for public health spaces and communities that take this on and say, we are going to be a friendly community for breastfeeding moms. All those kind of things would help. And then I think just as an individual, I do this when I see a woman in public, you know, breastfeeding, I try to just meet her eye and give her a smile and a little nod, like, you know, good for you. Because oftentimes they don't get that kind of positive reinforcement when they're out and about. And for some women, it makes a big difference to know, hey, this person doesn't even know me and they think I'm doing a good job. You know, that's just wonderful.
Beth, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome. I was pleased to be on, and thank you for asking me.
Beth Olson is an associate professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison, the author or co-author of dozens of scholarly articles on breastfeeding. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.